Welcome to Spectrum, a daily public affairs presentation of WCSM. And now, here's Spectrum, the talk of Mercer and Auglaize counties. And we welcome you to our Spectrum program. The City of Salina's Law Director, George Moore, with us today. And George, I wanted to thank you, first of all, for coming by. How long in office now?
It has been 12 and a half wonderful years so far.
That's a long, long time. You know, over the time you have been in office, too, it's interesting to think about how much not only your position has changed, but the world has changed. You know, crimes that weren't an issue years ago, or, you know, things that may have faded out, or different ways people can communicate, a different job than it was back then.
We certainly didn't have, apps that don't keep records of things that are popular, you know, such as, drawing the blank for what it's called. It disappears.
Oh, yeah, the Snapchat and some of the other ones, yeah. Or, as I like to say, people think it disappears. You know, we've had some interesting cases locally where the issue was is that it did not disappear at all. And the police sometimes can even contact companies and subpoena records.
Yeah, there's certainly things that are kept that might surprise you and things that are not kept that also might surprise you.
And so that's something that, people have had to, at times, learn the hard way. And then another thing, too, to kind of talk about this, I think everybody's familiar with the term nepotism, and what it means and what it's about versus, Ohio records. Like the example, if somebody works at a private company and they notice that they put in for a promotion and perhaps the boss's brother or nephew gets it, we call that nepotism sometimes, right? They weren't necessarily the most qualified, but we're going to let you in. Of course, in a private company, I imagine that's not much of an issue, but it does become one with public entities.
Right. There's a series of laws, if you will, called the nepotism laws, which are applicable to public entities. Cities, villages are much more constricted by public sector laws. It's because, there's been abuse over the years, and the old Tammany Hall style of running a city, in the 1800s, perhaps, where the new mayor comes in and they instantly fire all of their predecessors' appointees and employees from top to bottom because, hey, my supporters need those paid positions by the government, and that's not right. And so, there's now civil service laws to make sure that, it's based upon qualification and not affiliation or political support or reimbursement or retribution, if you will.
Right. Now, people sometimes have seen where, a police or fire chief will retire or it's time to hire a new lieutenant or sergeant or something. And people might say, do you have any interviews lined up? And the answer is no, we're going to give a test. And whoever gets the highest score is the new chief or new lieutenant or whatever it is. You kind of go right over that and it eliminates even the possibility of some nepotism.
Right, especially like with civil service, rules, there's very specified lists for who is qualified to sit to take a certain examination. So usually if it's for use the police department, for example, a rank of promotion would be to sergeant. So any patrolman, I believe if they've been there for so long, according to the rules, any patrolman would be eligible to sit for that sergeant's test. If there's a test for like the chief or the assistant chief, I believe that only a sergeant one of those could only sit for the chief or the assistant chief. One of the sergeants could. It's not opened up to every member of the rank and file, if you will.
Now, are there provisions where if a police or fire chief, and it's not a secret what the city's going through right now, but they have somebody interested in becoming a firefighter or police officer, and that happens to be a relative, is there a way they can, call the city administration, even you, and say, hey, listen, this may be my nephew or brother-in-law or little brother or sister, something like that, and And certainly there could be the appearance of impropriety, but they actually are very qualified. They are coincidentally related to me. How would that be handled?
Ohio law spells out what nepotism is and how it applies. If you look under the Ohio Ethics Commission website, I've got a printout here from it, but it defines what nepotism is. And just to quote from it here, it starts off kind of addressing the very situation that you've brought up here. And again, to quote the Ohio Ethics Commission, it says, "Many families have a strong tradition of public service, and it is common for two family members to serve the same public agency or municipality. However, the ethics law forbids public officials or employees from authorizing or using a public position to secure public contracts, including a public job, for a member of their family. Therefore, public officials and employees are prohibited from using their public position to directly hire or to secure the hire of a family member. In fact, in the state of Ohio, nepotism is a fourth degree felony." And I just want to stop right there. A felony is a very serious charged crime. And operating under the influence of alcohol, that's a misdemeanor one. Domestic violence, that's a misdemeanor one. Those are serious crimes, but felony is more serious than that. And one of the next sections in here, it says, well, what are some of the nepotism prohibitions? I think these three paragraphs give a lot of important information. To quote the Ohio Ethics Commission, "Public officials or employees are required by law to completely remove themselves from participating in any way," and that's underlined, "in any way in the hiring process if a family member is competing for a public job. The public official or employee may not in any way use his or her position to influence anyone to hire a family member. In other words, not only can the public official or employee not directly hire a family member into a public job, he or she also cannot recommend or otherwise use his or her connection to the hiring authority to get a job for a family member. The official or employee would also be prohibited from calling other public officials or employees and asking them to hire a relative." So those two paragraphs, I think, kind of address what you've asked, you know, here. But I wanted to also go on. There's a third paragraph here. "If a public servant's family member is lawfully hired by a public entity," so it is possible, okay, "without the public servant's participation in the hire, the ethics law continues to limit the actions of the public official or employee. The public servant cannot be the family member's direct supervisor or participate in any decisions on matters that affect a family member's employment, such as raises, promotions, and performance evaluations."
Well, it sounds to me like one thing that could be done is to perhaps do some restructuring where, they may have to work together, but they may report to someone else, possibly.
I believe it's certainly possible to structure a public safety department to where, you could have relatives that are not violating the nepotism law on either end of it. And that's something that we're actively looking into here. It may be along the lines of perhaps creating a few divisions, maybe, in one of the, in the department, or maybe creating additional, we'll say, shift teams, to which there'd be no possibility of any nepotism because you have to think that, the one family member can't have any influence over any type of evaluation or anything of their family member. And so there's, again, I believe there's ways to do it that we're looking into here. And as I've said at City Council on many occasions, if anybody has any ideas, I've heard people suggest that other villages, other cities do this, and I've always said, if you tell me who they are, I will call any law director in the state and ask them, is it true that you guys do this? And if you do, How do you do that? Because they may have, there may be something different with regards to their municipality. Maybe a village is treated differently for something. You know, maybe if it's a union versus a non-union, you know, like a fire department, that might make a difference. You know, like I would need to know that generally and then see how it would specifically apply here if we were to do that in the city of Salina.
All right. It also sounds as if, too, you're doing what you do. You remind people, you know, be mindful of the laws as you proceed. A lot of your job is that sometimes.
Yeah, I love to, I guess, be able to help find a solution within the bounds of where we have to stay in as a city.
I was going to also add another thing that you talk about a lot as we're talking to George Morris, Salina City Law Director, if you're just tuning in. Transparency is a big thing, you know, and a lot of times it's easier than ever for citizens to watch a city council meeting. They are streamed. The other thing, too, is, you know, we, of course, like to promote agendas when they come out to tell people here's the, you know, the agenda for you. But, you know, with you and your own website, you like to put that out there. Also, you know, committee meetings are not streamed on that website. You like to record them yourself. And you encourage people, you know, please listen to this stuff. This is your city. This is your town. This pertains to you. You live here.
That's right. Generally, the Sunshine Law says that things must occur in the sunshine, out in the open. And so, you know, we have the public meetings component, and the other half of that is public documents, public records, you know. The meetings are for the public, the documents are for the public. There's, of course, a few exceptions to each, but by and large, you know, I mean, the public's entitled to be aware of everything that we're doing as we're doing it, as we're going through things. And, you know, COVID changed virtually everything, if not permanently in everything, at least, you know, in many ways. And some of those, I think, have proved beneficial, one of which, the city of Salina, I recall, that's when we started going live on our Facebook. I think we just recorded them shortly before, like, and they were available for viewing, but for years now, we've been going live on Facebook Live. If you look up City of Salina, Ohio on Facebook, you should be able to, I think it's about an hour beforehand. There's a, you know, a screen that comes up says, you know, at 7 o'clock is when we start the regular meeting. And, if you're not able to come up in person, which you're always welcome to come up, it's at 225 North Main Street in Salina.
Upstairs?
Upstairs. Yeah. We do have an elevator.
You do?
Yep. Yeah. Make sure you come in the back door there. The front door is locked.
Yep. But, go where the police.
Yeah, come back to the police entrance there. And but, yeah, we started, you know, live streaming our meetings here, and we received a lot of good, positive feedback from that. And, you know, we get a council packet is what we call it, before a council meeting. And usually, they're delivered about the Friday afternoon, you know, before a Monday meeting. And that has the upcoming agenda. It has minutes from the previous meeting, from any previous committee meetings, any legislation that we're considering along with its attachments. First time legislation will be in the packet. Ordinances or resolutions that are up for a second or third reading, those were in the previous packet. And then there's also a report from the Safety Service Director, which essentially is a summary of interesting or important information from each of the departments, which is provided by the department head. And in that, there's reports and statistics from police, fire runs, things of that nature. There's down to, I've seen X number of potholes were filled in, on, you know, on X street or whatever. They really, you know, every department strives to, in as real time as possible, you know, with these reports coming out twice a month here, to keep the public updated. Here's what's going on in your city, you know.
Yeah, and some of it for the average citizen might seem kind of mundane, but there are, everybody, you know, has their, what we call their pet issues, George, you know, the things that, that are of concern to them, and that would be a time to either bring it up or even to say, I don't like this legislation, I'm going to come express my opinion, or I just want to hear what was said, you know, if you want to go back and watch a meeting. Right. We've never really had this before. It's an opportunity for transparency.
Yeah, I love transparency. I always have. And I take it very seriously to the point where, you know, we live stream our regular council meetings. Committee meetings are not live streamed. Committee meetings are considered like a working session. If you ever are watching a council meeting and we'll say the council really starts to get, we'll say, I don't mean bogged down in, but they really start discussing all the kind of the nuts and bolts of something. One of them will often say, maybe we should refer this to a committee, because that's where you really get in and kind of hash out the details. And because those are not live streamed, I have, I believe from day one, I have always audio recorded those, which started off for my own personal notes and recollection. And as of about the last, I'd say, 9-10 months, I have been uploading those audio files to my website just to give people another opportunity to, you know, see what's going on. Well, I guess hear what's going on, you know, with yes. the audio files there.
And people need to be patient and you know, turn it up as needed, because you're using one recorder. You're not exactly in the middle of the room. You can't move it around, but it's, you can hear it. It's good.
Yeah, and you know, it's nice to be able to, I guess, to have that instant communication that we just didn't have just even, you know, a generation ago.
No question. Another thing too that has kind of changed, you know, as you also prosecute the city's, you know, misdemeanor cases, here in Mercer County, we now have a public defender's office. You know, we have Thomas Lucente, who does the felonies. Jim Hearn's the misdemeanor guy. And, you know, with the exception of times where, you know, that perhaps there's a case with multiple, you know, defendants. But for the most part, if there's a misdemeanor case and an attorney is involved, that's who you're working with now, right? As far as you're one side, he's the other side.
Yes. Jim Hearn Jr. is the he's the assistant public defender, and his primary assignment is the Salina Municipal Court. And if an indigent defendant asks for a court-appointed attorney, their office is the primary appointee for that. If there is a conflict, there's a we still maintain the local public defender attorney list, if you will. And but you know, again, there it's a only if there's a conflict type of thing. So yes, I work several times a month across the aisle, if you will, with the public defender's office.
And that, another thing with that too, you talk about a defendant, you know, how they're entitled to defense, and I'm sure, you know, within reason, you know, you'll work with them too. Certainly, you have respect, you know, for that defendant and their situation, you know, and you'll be as reasonable as you can be. I'm sure there are times where you'll listen to what they have to say, or you'll wheel and deal as needed with Mr. Hearn, and then probably other times where you realize, we need to do something here. There needs to be some accountability, right? Each case would be a little different.
Absolutely. We are blessed in this county, and I believe always have been. You know, our docket load is such that it allows us to really look at the file. You know, I mean, if it's a, we'll say it's a domestic violence, or we'll say an assault case, you know, not all assault cases are exactly the same. I mean, you know, some may involve a drunken fight in a bar where they didn't know each other. You know, some assaults may involve somebody that specifically goes out targeting the other individual for something that some perceived wrong of theirs. And so there's multiple factors that, you know, take into account. Was it a mental health issue? Was drugs or alcohol involved? You know, and so we really try to get in. We each have our own role, you know, but we all need to know, you know, what's what's going on in the case here. And you can't just separate the alleged criminal act from the person's life.
I was going to also add, I'm sure sometimes the defendant just wants to be heard from, you know, and for you, unless there's video evidence, you weren't there. And if you have a defendant saying, wait a second, Mr. Moore, I didn't start this, you know, he did, I was defending myself. They probably at least want to be heard from sometimes.
Yes, and it's my job, and I happily listen to anything that any defendant or their attorney has to say. You know, usually on speeding ticket cases. And I think a lot of courts and I think a lot of municipal prosecutors just set those for trial because why would we waste our time on those, I think is their view of it. But I always say, you know, and we often let them call in if they're from, you know, far away. I usually say, you know, you pled not guilty for a reason, and if there's something you wanted to go over with your case, now would be the time. And I mean, I've heard everything from, I'm telling you what, that wasn't me, to, I was speeding, and here's why. Or, I was speeding, but here's why. You know, those things, everything from, I had to use the restroom, I haven't had, my wife's having a baby as an excuse yet, but, you know. It may come in tomorrow.
That must be every officer's worst nightmare. Pull somebody over and realize what's going on here. And can I see your light? Oh, my goodness. Okay, follow me. Which hospital are you going to, right?
Follow me. Yeah.
Follow me. I'll turn the lights on. And we see that a lot on TV, I think.
Yeah. And maybe that's where some people get the idea. Who knows? But I'm always willing to hear what they, you know, what they have to say. And if it's something that, you know, the person has violated the law, it doesn't mean that they're a mean, evil, or dangerous person, or a bad person, or anything. But, I mean, if it's beyond a reasonable doubt that you were exceeding the speed limit by 10 miles an hour, that is what that is. You know,
and you gotta slow down.
I mean, you know, and some people come in and they don't really ask for anything, and just completely admit, yep, I was going over, I was not paying attention, and they have no record. And I'm happy to offer them, you know, some type of mutually agreeable plea here, and then complete opposite end, you know, 30 moving violations on the priors, and, you know, the defendant just can't believe that I won't just dismiss the case. I'm like,
how unreasonable of you, right?
I mean, I tell them, I said, look, I have a duty.
You do.
To protect the motoring public.
And sometimes in cases like that, people get that cold reality reminder that these are your driving privileges. You know, we're not entitled to drive. We drive if we pass the test and behave as we're supposed to, right, on the public roads. And, George, again, I want to thank you for coming on today. Always a pleasure to catch up with you. I know we'll do it again. The fair is coming up. A lot of times when we have you on for that, we talk about different things, of course, but always good to have you on in the law director capacity.
Well, thanks for having me on, and have a great rest of your day.